You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. You are now tuned in to the Roto Experts.
Hour number two, Roto Experts Fantasy Sports Radio Network. This is your fantasy baseball preview program. Thank you so much for tuning in. It's been nice to chat an hour about baseball. We've been so ingrained in football, other than Al, that we haven't had a chance to talk baseball enough. So I'm excited to be able to get to do it now for 2 hours with two guys that have just been so into baseball, even though football's going on. Of course, Matt Modica, who's been drafting since the beginning of the Arizona Fall League. So that's been like 2 months already. And then Al Melchior, who never stops diving into baseball. It's been a pleasure to talk to these two baseball geniuses. I got to ask you, though, Matt. Football is coming to an end. We're there. We've reached the finish line. Are you sick of football? Are you just sick of it?
You know why I'm not sick of football? Because this year I had my most successful year. I crushed it. So when I'm looking at the returns, I'm kind of sad to see it go, but I'm so excited for baseball. Baseball is my true love. You know, the thing is, if you want to be talking radio for 12 months out of the year, you better talk football, because football is the whale that swallows everything.
Do you see a direct correlation to you having your best year financially ever in fantasy football and being a member of the Roto Experts in the morning?
Yes, I do.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. Man, that's all I was looking for. Al, are you how ready are you for people to stop talking football and start asking baseball questions again?
I have to admit, I'm always ready for that. So, and we're starting to see it. So, like I said, I've got to get into game shape here and be ready for those questions.
Can I pick Al's brain for a second?
Yeah.
Al, I'm going to be doing my first dynasty ever. I mean, I do all these drafts and many, but I've never done a dynasty draft. It's a start from scratch. A lot of industry guys. I have the third pick. It's a no-brainer, Carlos Correa.
Oh, so drafting from scratch. Absolutely.
Okay.
Who are the first two picks in Dynasty?
Trout's going one. Okay. You know that. He went for 18. You had a bid for like next year, 18 roster spots.
Okay.
I bid 13. I thought I had a shot at him, but
right.
No.
I'm assuming. What does that mean, Harper, you have to bid 13? What does that mean?
Next year, you're going to have to pick up 18 more players. Like, you can keep up to, I think, 35 of the 40-man roster or something like that. So I'm assuming Harper's going second.
Okay.
And I got third, so I'm going to go Correa. I love Mookie Betts and even Altuve, but I think Altuve is getting to that stage where I want to have a keeper for
him. Is someone like Manny Machado someone that goes early?
Machado's going to, you know, Machado. Look, Chris Bryant, I think, is, you know, last year he had another, if he just, the average was different and stuff, but he's going to put up numbers from here till he continues to play. And
yeah. Nolan Arenado, yeah.
I just want the shortstop, the 23-year-old.
I get it. What about, so, and remember, I remember last year at the time, you had all the shortstops from Correa to Lindor to Seager, all these young shortstops, really been awesome thus far early in their careers in baseball. So there you go. A little Dynasty League talk here on the program. I can't say I saw that coming when we put this all together.
Sorry for that audible.
There's no worries. We're going to take a break. When we come back, let's get into the Angels. I guess kind of surprise signing of Ohtani. Many people thought he'd go to the Yankees. When he didn't, it seemed like the Mariners were inevitable. Instead, he goes to the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, and they've done a hell of a lot thus far in the offseason. We'll talk Ohtani and the rest of the Angels' offseason moves when we come back. It is the Roto Experts here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Hey, I'm Jeff. Look, I'm just a skeleton. I don't have an ACL anymore, but I'd still like to know what it means when one of my fantasy players sprains his. That's why I use the Inside Injuries app. It was created by real doctors, so you're getting information directly from people who have seen, touched, and operated on actual ACLs. Take it from me, a skeleton. If you aren't using it, you might as well just be guessing. Download the free app today and unlock the secrets of injury analysis.
Back with you here on the Roto Experts. And I know it's been a few weeks now, but I don't want to forget. Well, the big signing, the first major signing here of the offseason was Ohtani to the Angels. Everybody wanted him, except for the Orioles, who didn't bother. But besides that, everybody wanted Ohtani, and the Angels were the team that got him. They were the only team that promised him he was going to be able to pitch every 6 days and be allowed to hit. Billy Epler, former Yankees assistant GM, current Angels general manager, has said there are no plans to play Ohtani in the outfield at all this year, but they are going to DH him 2 to 3 times per week. So, with that all being said, I have a whole lot of questions out. Thankfully, some have been answered already, but there are a whole ton. The first, actually, is an interesting one. On days that Ohtani pitches, will the Angels use a DH, or are they allowing him to hit?
I wish I knew the answer to that question. You know, I would think there'd be a good chance they'd let him hit.
Wow.
It certainly would be fun, but, you know, you know what? Actually, now I'm thinking about it. If I just read between the lines, because I had read that report that you just were referring to where they could let him hit as much as 3 times a week,
yep,
as a DH. I don't recall seeing anything in that report saying that he would DH on the days that he pitches. So I wouldn't expect it.
Okay. It was just speculation on my part. I was kind of throwing it out there because I found it interesting. But they expect him to play or to DH. Basically, he'll pitch day one, get a day off the next day, play 2 days in a row, get a day off, that's 5, and then on the 6th day, he then pitches.
Look, I mean, he's going to be an extremely exciting player, being able to watch him play games as a DH and pitch. For fantasy purposes, I really only care about Ohtani, the pitcher. I'm going to look at him.
So it's really good that you brought that up, mm-hmm, Ohtani, the pitcher, because from what we're understanding now, we had this question. It seems like most formats are giving us 2 Ohtanis, mm-hmm, one the pitcher, one the hitter. I know Yahoo has said that. I know CBS has said that. I'm not sure what ESPN has said or the NFBC, but from what I understand, most formats are giving us Ohtani the pitcher and Ohtani the hitter.
Yeah, I'm looking in the NFBC where I play majority of my games. He's pitcher only. And I'm going to go with a 140. 160 would be the top. I can't see him after pitching something like 25 innings last year. I can't see him actually going higher than that. But if you look for, if he gives me 150, pitching, if he went to the American League, going to Anaheim is a really nice spot. And the defense, as we mentioned briefly before, that they're building there in the infield and stuff. You got Trout in center field, Maldonado behind the plate as far as his framing goes. So I'm excited for Ohtani, the pitcher. The problem is the first draft I did last month in the NFBC, I got him in the 7th round. The second draft I did a couple of weeks ago, he went with the 10th pick in the 3rd round. And I'm just not going to pay that price.
Yeah, so Ohtani, who I don't know, like, what does this 6-man rotation do for fantasy, Al? Because you're losing a bunch, you're getting a max 1 start a week. He'll never be a 2-start pitcher, given that he's pitching once every, you know, 6 days or so. What does that do to his fantasy value, even if he is an ace? And I actually like taking Japanese pitchers their first year over, because it's very hard for the hitters to read it. We've seen it, mm-hmm, so many times before, the latest for me being Kenta Maeda just a couple of years ago, right? I drafted him in the 13th round, and he was absolutely fantastic for the Dodgers that first time through the league. And I expect Ohtani, who has even more hoopla surrounding him, will even be better than that. But pitching every 6 days, what does that do to his fantasy value?
It certainly knocks it down a bit. I think it probably makes the difference between him being drafted as a number 2 starter and as a number 3 starter, because I don't see how you can draft, even right now with the extensive use of the bullpen and shortening the game for the starting pitcher that we're seeing all across the majors, with the kinds of restrictions that Matt was talking about. And I think 150 to 160, that's probably a pretty good expectation for Ohtani's innings. How can you draft that for your number 2 pitcher? I just don't see people being willing to do that. I mean, we're seeing people being sort of over-enthusiastic right now in mocks. Number 1, it doesn't count. And, you know, number 2, I think once the novelty wears off a little bit, by the time we get to March, I think people will be drafting them, you know, around maybe the number 30 starter off the board.
Yeah, look, I think the talent is there. And like Greg, as you mentioned, that first year with the Japanese pitcher. You know, the teams are unfamiliar with him, the deception and all that. Another thing, too, is Otani's coming over much younger than these guys.
23 years old.
And he's as much as, you know, the Angels got a gift here for what they have to pay for him on the open market. It would have been like $150 to $200. That's why I do believe with the moves that they've made, there is hope that they do sign a Darvish-type pitcher, something like that, or can possibly pull some other kind of deal off. Because they're going to need pitching. You know, Garrett Richards, I like him this year, but, you know, there's no guarantee with Garrett Richards. You know, there's talent there. But the Ohtani thing, I would warn people, don't get too caught up in the hitter Ohtani is. Draft him more for the pitcher.
So if you want the pitcher Ohtani, you said you've seen him go anywhere from the third round to the sixth round. What number pitcher would you want him as? Al says you can't draft him as an SP2.
I agree 100% with Al saying. I want him as an SP3, and I'm a person that's willing to pay up for pitching.
Right.
Especially the leagues I play, there's no trading and stuff like that. And you need to have like a minimum of 1,400 like strikeouts and stuff like that. So I don't mind paying up, but he can't be. Look, I'm going to take Aaron Nola over Ohtani every time. I'm just sorry. I have big expectations for Aaron Nola. He got like close to 170 in innings pitched last year, or circa that. And his next step is closer to that 200 range. He stays healthy. Everything there is waiting. And as far as Ohtani, I'm not saying this kid isn't talented and isn't going to be a superstar at some point, but I think he's not going to reach that 180 level. I'd be shocked if he hits 180.
I totally agree with that. Now, you said you much prefer the pitcher Ohtani to the hitter Ohtani, and that makes sense. If we've outlined it correctly, Al, Ohtani's only going to DH twice a week, maybe three times, you know, if it's a seven-day week, who knows, right? So you're getting at max 3 days a week from Ohtani, the hitter. If you play in a format, which is what we mostly see, of two Ohtanis, one the pitcher, one the hitter, does it make any sense to draft a guy that's only going to play 3 days?
It would have to be a very, very deep league. And I mean, I play in those leagues, AL-only leagues, where inevitably, unless you're super, super lucky or you've drafted extremely well, there's going to be one or two spots at least every week where you're just, you know, scraping for somebody who may be a platoon-type player and put up good numbers in that situation. That's the kind of void that Ohtani can fill, is somebody who maybe does put up really good numbers in 200, you know, maybe 250 plate appearances. So we're talking a really deep league. But, you know, in those leagues, he should be on your radar.
Okay, but in a standard 24-round draft, a 12-team league, the majority of people that are listening to us right now, at least they plan, should he be drafted at all?
You can only draft him, say, in a Yahoo daily league, like the 23rd round.
Okay.
That's the way I look at it. To me, he's what my expectations would be of, say, like Curtis Granderson of the last year or two.
Okay.
Look, this is still a guy that's going to be facing major league hitting for the first time. He's only going to be playing two or three times a week. So he's not going to be able to, I don't believe, make the adjustments necessary as if he got 600-plus plate appearances over the course of a season.
And let's also make it clear, we talked before about Stephen Piscotty and his personal life bleeding into his professional life. This is a dude that has to make a transition from living in Japan and being with a team that everyone speaks the same language and they all know each other, to coming over, moving from Japan to LA/Anaheim, which is one of the reasons maybe he didn't want to live in a bigger city. And he has to be adjust both as a hitter and a pitcher. It is a lot of pressure on a 23-year-old kid.
I think he's got the mindset, though. I think this kid, he has his future mapped out. He knows what he wants to do. So that aspect, as far as what he wants to do and having to deal with everything, I think he's pretty much planned this out. He's been a sensation since like high school. You watch some clips they have on him there. And he's still, even in Anaheim, it's Orange County and all that, it's still Los Angeles. You know what I'm saying? Still, you know, California, it's a big enough market for him. And I think he's going to take MLB by storm, but I just don't see it in the hitting side as consistent. You just can't rely on that.
Yeah, and I get it. The mindset seems like everything is right for Ohtani. But, Al, there's a lot of adjustments coming over from Japan. And maybe he has the brightest mind, and he's very composed, and everything is right. But when you start that first cold streak at the plate, or you start that first cold streak on the mound, some of that has to take a toll on the other side of it, no?
That's a really good point. I don't know that it has to, again, because we don't know exactly what his mindset is. There's so many things that we really can't be sure about. But, you know, I would just go back to kind of the bigger question about him as a hitter, that, you know, I do think that he's got some appeal in those daily lineup leagues. But those are the kinds of guys that you stream anyway. So you're going to have ample opportunity, I think, and I hope, to see how he makes that adjustment as a hitter anyway, you know, maybe streaming him off of waivers.
Ohtani wasn't the only move the Angels made. They did a whole lot more. We'll talk about it next.
Steiner Sports is the leading memorabilia provider for the New York Yankees, Rangers, Giants, Knicks, and the Brooklyn Nets. Featuring hundreds of items from your favorite athletes, Steiner Sports is your source for the best sports gifts. Go to SteinerSports.com/box and shop our collection of memorabilia boxes, which include 10 gifts for the price of one. We've made one for each of your favorite teams. Hurry, supplies are limited, and these are some of the best deals we have ever offered. So go to SteinerSports.com/box today.
Ohtani was only the first move for the Angels this offseason. Or maybe it wasn't even the first move. If you go back a little further and realize they signed Justin Upton to a lengthy extension. In fact, if you just started football a little bit early, you may not even realize Justin Upton's on the Angels. But he is. He was traded away from Detroit to Los Angeles and had a really nice last month with the Angels. Nice enough that they re-signed him to a long-term extension. Upton with Trout in that outfield, how good will that be this year, Matt?
Well, the thing with Upton is, in a Roto, I think he's been underrated a lot. Because everybody, at one point, everybody expected this kid to be super elite. That never happened. But he puts up consistent numbers year in and year out. I can see in a head-to-head the headache that he could be and why people, you know, maybe shy away from him. But hey, look, the Angels need guys that can produce. When you have a Mike Trout, you can't waste it. I see what they're doing here. That's why I'm hoping they can acquire one more pitcher.
So they acquire Justin Upton at the before the August 31st waiver deadline or non-waiver deadline or waiver deadline, whatever. Before August 31st, they acquire Justin Upton and they stick with him. And I'm somebody Al that never drafts Justin Upton. I play in a head-to-head categories league, and he is so streaky, and he's just. There, I wake up on May 1st, and he's batting like .220, and it kills me. And then, of course, I wake up on September 1st, and there he is. He's got the .285 average. He's got 30 home runs. He's got 15-20 stolen bases. I'm like, where the hell did this come from? That's Justin Upton, and he's just never anybody I want on my team. And yet, the Angels commit to him. And when you look at the numbers year after year, as Matt's doing right now, they're there.
Yeah, you're right. But month to month, and you know, even over his career, sometimes year to year, there's a lot of inconsistency. So, you know, I get you on that. And I do occasionally draft him, and then I sort of feel bad about it because it's, you know, well, with all the potential this guy has, why is he still there? What did I do wrong?
Right.
So I get that. But it certainly looks a lot better now that he's going to have a little bit of a little bit more company in that Angels lineup.
So I'll say this, Matt. Since 2011, he has played in at least 149 games in every one of those years. So if nothing else, Justin Upton is basically picture perfect when it comes to health. He's missed the most games he's missed in a single season came back in 2013 with the Braves. He missed 13 games. And I think anybody would sign up for that many games every single year. And when you're basically guaranteed at least 25 home runs, at least 80 RBI, and a batting average, you know, anywhere from .250 to .270, you're feeling okay, especially where the OBP was last year at .361. Justin Upton at this stage of his career is what he is. Is that good enough for you to draft him?
It's good enough, and I'm gonna piggyback on what Al said. It was like last year he was a tremendous value, one of the better values in drafts. In the 15 team leagues I was in, he was going like seventh, anywhere from sixth to eighth. In those rounds. And so I probably settled maybe more on seven. And at that spot, you really like him. But he's coming off a year where he's got like 35 homers and 14 stolen bases. And people see that and they salivate. I think it's pretty safe to say he's probably a 30-10 guy. The average is what fluctuates with him. And you want that more towards that 270 end. But, you know, you're looking at this lineup that they're building and they're creating in Anaheim. There is a lot to like. I'm not going to pay his price this year, though. I think Well, I saw him in my last draft. He went in the third round, more towards the end of the third round. But that's a lot. That's a lot to ask. I'd rather wait maybe another round. I'll take Nelson Cruz, old man Cruz, and I'll get some. I'll get those 10 stolen bases or more somewhere else.
He is now 30 years old, Justin Upton, and Al mentioned those month-to-month splits. And I have the average here, which is the big fluctuating thing, as Matt pointed out. In April last year, batted 290, which is a great start to the season. Five home runs, 15 ribbies, 15 runs scored. Off to a great start with Detroit. Follow that up in May, batting 217. I know you can pick apart any player, but I find it interesting. 290 to 217, but the power was still there. Four home runs. Okay, you're at nine for the year. That's pretty good. The month later, 305. All right, now we're batting 300 again. It's fantastic. Six home runs. Now you're up to 15. It's great. Then you get to July. 322, the best average month of the year. But he only hit two home runs. Follow that up with August, 275. And then in September, when you need him most, 245 with the seven home runs. He had 11 home runs in August where he batted 275. So the power is real. The average, clearly, as both of you guys have stated, is the thing that fluctuates the most.
Yeah, I'm looking, just to give it for instance, he went like, I don't know, say the eighth pick of the third round, ninth pick of the third round. After that, it was the ninth pick, actually, because Ohtani went after him,
right,
which was, in my opinion, too high. But then you got Brian Dozier, who I take for the position. I'm going to get the home runs. I'm going to get the stolen bases there. Jose Abreu, who consistently hits, you know, around that 30 home runs and gives you at least a 290 to 300 batting average. And you know, I think that that's a player the Red Sox should be all over.
I agree with that.
Jose Abreu type guy, a guy that they're missing. Even a Corey Seager, give me the shortstop that has a 300 batting average and you know could hit 30 home runs. So, I mean, there's players like that that I'm gonna lean towards there over a Justin Upton.
I will say this, Justin Upton last season, the highest BABIP of his career, or one of the highest BABIPs of his career at 341.
And I just want to say, I don't hate him for fantasy. I just don't like his
where
price
he's going
this year. That's all.
What about some of the other Angels that they've acquired thus far this offseason? As I said, it started with Justin Upton, you moved on to Ohtani, and then they started filling in their infield. The first move was the trade for Ian Kinsler. What did you think of that trade, and what do you think of the fit, Al, of Kinsler at second base for the Angels?
Well, my initial thought was this is, you know, again, great for the pitching staff. Fantasy-wise, I wasn't that really interested or excited. But then, you know, doing a little bit of a deeper dive, and I talked about this on my show over the weekend, there's always a handful of players who have a performance that just really completely escapes me during the regular season. And Kinsler's was one of them. And it was a case where the batting average was a disappointment, but he was a speed power guy, as he has been many times throughout his career. He had 22 home runs for the Tigers, stole 14 bases, scored 90 runs atop a Tigers lineup that got thinned out late in the season. But 244 on balls in play, 236 overall, despite the fact that he hit for hard contact more often last year than he did the year before. So I think this is a case where Kinsler, in the drafts that I've seen, going very, very late, mm-hmm. late rounder in like a 12-team league. And he's, you know, a very nice fallback option at second base where he should be able to score a lot of runs and give you that, somewhat modest power-speed combo.
Matt, Kinsler's one of these second basemen that are there every year. Like, he's on the board, and you're just like, ugh, Ian Kinsler. I'm not doing the stupid Ian Kinsler thing. But if you're in a standard 12-team league, as Al was just referring to, he's a guy everybody knows, and somebody's going to draft them. And you look at these final numbers, 22 home runs, as Al said, the 90 runs scored. He has scored at least 85 runs every year since 2011. You can lock him in at 85 runs scored. He has had 20 home run power in back-to-back years. That's despite playing Detroit, obviously a hitter's park. Now, the average has gone significantly down. 296 in 2015, 288 in 2016, 236 last year in 2017. But the OBP also goes down. The strikeout percentage went down as well. But the BABIP, if you look at that from last
year,
all the way down at 244, the average picks up a little bit. I think Ian Kinsler is really a perfect middle infielder for your team.
Yeah, like I said, he's a guy that people, look, they see that 236 average, and they're like, oh, it's going to be a batting average drain. But he's going late. He's going in the 14th round of 15-teamers. And as you stated, runs, which is everybody kind of overlooks runs for some reason. If you look from it last year, once again, plate discipline, things how you look with hitters, the walk percentage went up. The strikeout percentage went down a little, like 2 or 3%. And the BABIP was way down considered to the past couple of seasons. This is a guy, at worst, can give you that 15 to 15. Say he doesn't hit the 20, say he finishes with 18, and say he steals a dozen bases. He's going to get runs in this lineup. They're building a really nice lineup, a nice infield for the pitching, as we've stated. So this is a guy that I overlooked initially that I'm on, that I want to be on. If I... Second base is kind of nice, but if I do miss out on second base and I can get a Kinsler, I can grab him later on, I'm totally in for that.
Yeah, I think you look at Ian Kinsler, like I said, those stats are there year after year, even if the name is ugly. The younger player that the Angels signed for that infield was Zach Cozart, who had a career year in Cincinnati last year. Can he follow that up with doing the same in Los Angeles now?
Nope. I feel like I spent the whole 2017 season writing and talking about how is Zach Cozart doing this? How is he doing it? And I finally reached the conclusion. I buy into the power, but I just don't buy the batting average. And again, we're talking about BABIP here. You know, very, very high BABIP for Cozart. Didn't make any sense. And, you know, postseason, taking an even deeper look at it, the StatCast metrics definitely don't back up a high BABIP for Cozart. And frankly, they didn't even back up the power. And now he's going from Great American Ballpark to Angel Stadium. That's not going to help. So, yeah, I think he's a serious, serious regression candidate.
I think if you look at Cozart 2016 numbers, that's very doable for him. He's another guy. What I like to look at as far as BABIP goes, so, you know, anybody that's been around the league enough has a few years in them. Look at the career BABIP, and then look at their BABIP numbers, and what's the outlier, what's not. So I'm with Al on pretty much most of this, his outlook. I don't think he's going to hit 25 homers. The plate discipline is another thing that did get better for him last year. He's in a better, you know, better lineup, but...
Also important to note, Zach Cozart has not played 125 games since 2014. It's been 3 years, all under 125. We'll take a break. When we come back, some of the free agent signings that have taken place thus far in the offseason, including the Phillies signing first baseman Carlos Santana. What's it mean for him? What's it mean for Reese Hoskins? And what's it mean for the rest of the Phillies outfield? We'll discuss it when we come back on the Roto Experts Fantasy Baseball Preview.
Join the family at Modell Sporting Goods. Visit your nearest Modell's and sign up for our MVP Rewards Program to receive insider deals all year round. Earn points on every purchase when you use your MVP card to earn Modell's cash back. It's our way of thanking you for being a loyal customer. Upon signing up, receive 10% off your purchase and 15% off your next purchase. It's that simple. Plus, new MVPs this month are eligible to win a $500 Modell's gift card. When you gotta play more and pay less, you gotta go to Mo's.
We are here, Roto Experts, Al Melchior, Matt Modica. I am Greg Sussman. A little fantasy baseball preview for you before we hit the new year. And I have to ask, what were the Phillies thinking signing first baseman Carlos Santana for 3 years and $60 million? The Phillies had a plan. I think they did a nice job rebuilding that farm system, replacing Ruben Amaro, kind of getting the house back in order because they had a bad farm system. They had overloaded contracts. It wasn't working. But now all those guys are off the books, and they've been through the last 2 years, which is a straight rebuild. Here they're year three, and I don't think they're there yet. I still think they have another year to go. So why 3 years to a first baseman that's in his mid-30s when you already have a younger first baseman who had a nice little year last year, Al?
Well, they do have a bit of a mismatch still in terms of hitting versus pitching. I mean, the lineup's looking pretty good now for the Phillies. And, you know, I think that this this move enables them to take one of those outfielders. It won't be Hoskins who goes to the outfielder. But to trade, you know, Nick Williams, maybe Odubel Herrera, maybe Aaron Altair, and get some pitching. So I just think, you know, I don't know this specifically, but it just would make too much sense. And I did see a report that they are looking to move an outfielder. So I have to just think that this was probably a way for them to get a solid bat in the lineup for the next couple of years. Somebody who's going to be there when the team is ready to compete still, and leverage one of the younger players for some pitching help.
Yeah, no, I think it's a good move overall, and I agree with Al. They do need the pitching help. Look, you could look at guys like Nick Pivetta or Mark Leiter as being possible end gamers that have some upside in fantasy purposes, but they got to get it done. It's nice to look at, you know, upside end gamers there, but after Nola, Jared Eichhoff was extremely disappointing last year for me. Vincent Velasquez has a ton of talent, but I don't know if he's a starting pitcher. I mean, maybe he's a shutdown closer that you'll see at some point. You got to give him every opportunity to be a starter, but that's the main thing. And being a switch hitter for Santana, with this park, both sides of the plate, it's there. The park is made for the power. Like right field in Progressive Field, is it still called in Cleveland?
I don't know. I'm not even sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So that power plays there to our right field and stuff. So I think it's a good move for them for what they're trying to do. They're going to bring up the kid Crawford now, give him the spot, and hopefully Mikel Franco can rebound, or maybe he possibly does get moved. I hear the Giants had some interest in him.
So the Giants have interest in anybody without ever making a deal. But I do have to ask, what happens to all these guys? Assuming that Carlos Santana was signed here 3 years at $60 million to play first base every day, where does Rhys Hoskins go? I presumably believe left field, but you have Aaron Altair out there. You have Odubel Herrera out there. You have Nick Williams, a highly touted prospect out there. There's four guys. There's only three spots.
Yeah, and Roman Quinn, too, waiting in the wings.
Sure.
If he could stay healthy. So, yeah, it's a nice problem to have for the Phillies. And, you know, as of right now, I would expect that you'd have an outfield of Williams and Hoskins in the corner, Herrera in center. That's a pretty nice alignment right there. Altair didn't really finish strong last year. In fact, from June forward, hit just .254. Didn't get on base a whole lot. The power was, you know, good, but I think not enough to compensate for you know, the lack of a high on base percentage. So that would be my guess. But like I said, that could all change. They could move any one of those guys, save for Hoskins. So it'll be interesting to see what they do.
So that was actually my next question. Is any of these guys good enough to make a trade, to clear, you know, to make sure that they're staying here ultimately? Like, Rhys Hoskins needs to play every day. Like, we saw that last year. In order to develop, he has to play every day. Odubel Herrera has established himself as an everyday major league player. There's no doubt about that. And I know you said Aaron Altair underperformed the second half of last year, Al, but I think this is another guy that, listen, he needs to play as many games as possible to continue to improve. There's too many guys there, Matt.
But I could see, like Al said, I could see them packaging a deal, whether it's an Altair or Williams, would say Cesar Hernandez. I think the kid you want to get, if you're in a 12-team and you're drafting late, is Scott Kingery. I think Kingery is going to be a really nice
Who player. Is Scott Kingery for everybody?
He's their second baseman of the future. You got a brief look at him prior. I think he's a perfect end gamer. If you have, like, some of the Yahoo leagues will allow you to stash one minor leaguer or something like that. Because I think he's going to be up. I think he does have, he has a little bit of power. He has speed, and the kid can hit.
What do you think, Al, from a fantasy perspective, in regards to J.P. Crawford? They traded away Freddie Galvis to San Diego to clear up space. Now, that means J.P. Crawford is the everyday shortstop, no questions asked. What's his fantasy value this year?
I think it's pretty low, or at least, you know, I think there's upside there, but he's one of these players who, you know, I think that what the scouts have projected for him, you know, we just haven't really seen that show up in his minor league stats. So I, you know, he could be one of these guys that surprises us, puts it all together, but I'd go late round at him if I go at all for Crawford. I'd say even in a 12 teamer.
I think I think with Crawford, it's, when we hear, like, he's been their top prospect, you have to forget, glove has a lot to do with it and stuff like this. Besides, you know, I'm not looking really. He's not on my radar for 2018 as far as a redraft fantasy. Like I said, I'm looking at Kingery, not
right.
Crawford.
All right, fair enough. So Crawford, the longtime top prospect for the Phillies, surpassed on the list this year for Matt Modica in favor of Scott Kingery. So there you go. What do you expect out of Rhys Hoskins if you can project him? Where is he currently going in drafts?
He's going high, and he's a little too high for me. It's more like that mid third to early fourth is where Hoskins is going. Look, I see the power and stuff. I can see the 30-plus home runs. I can see anywhere from, like, say, a 260 to 280-ish batting average. I'll either, if I was going to pay that kind of a price, I'd say I got to pay early third for Cody Bellinger. I'd rather take Bellinger.
Definitely.
Or I'll wait on a guy who doesn't have the batting average of a Hoskins. It's going to be lower, but has the same power potential, like a Matt Olson, who should play every day. My only fear is that he hits like 220. Like, he could hit like 30 to 40 homers, but bat 220.
What do you believe the fantasy value is for Rhys Hoskins, Al?
I think it's not too far off where he's being drafted. I actually don't think it's crazy to take him in the third round, depending on you know, who you took one and two and what's out there. I mean, the first baseman in the mocks that I participated in so far, they go fast. So Bellinger, you know, if you're picking out, you know, like 35th, 36th overall, I think there's a good chance Bellinger's not there. There might be quite a drop off you know, you're coming back after your third or fourth round pick. So I think that 3-4 turn, I think, is at least when you consider him among your other alternatives. And, you know, what Matt mentioned, you know, the batting average doesn't strike out a ton. If it's an OBP or a points league, he has good plate discipline with what should be a high walk rate. So it's a really, you know, great package that I think is worthy of a pick in the first four rounds.
So there you go. That's Rhys Hoskins, of course, who really came on strong the second half of the year. It's another one of those things, if you were just watching football and you stopped paying attention to baseball, you may not realize how good of a second half Rhys Hoskins had, where he finished with 18 home runs last year in the majors after hitting 29 in the minors last year, 47 home runs total.
Yeah, if your baseball team, like, tanked and you stopped, you walked away from baseball after the All-Star break or early August, you missed Hoskins. You missed what Matt Olson did.
Yep.
So,
yeah, Hoskins, the OBP last year in the majors, 396. That's how good he was, and why he's being drafted as around a third, fourth round pick. And Matt Olson, too, also going very high. People that tuned away from baseball, they might not even know who Matt Olson is.
Yeah, no, but the thing with Olson is he's going to be given every opportunity to play in Oakland.
Yep.
So that's a good thing there. The only thing I worry is that batting average. I mean, you could see this is a kid that the power is there. There's no questions to ask about that. It's the plate discipline, and can he made improvements. Can they sustain, and will he be able to make adjustments this year? Because pitchers will have the tape on him from last year.
Matt Olson also hit 47 home runs combined between the minors and the majors last year for Oakland. A couple of quick hitters here before we get to the break. Fernando Rodney is not dead yet for fantasy purposes, Al. He signs with the Twins. The team, as he said, promised him he'll be the closer.
Yeah, well, I've just come full circle because, you know, the Diamondbacks signed him last year. I thought he won't have that job by the end of April. And he was one of, I think, nine closers that went wire to wire last year without ever giving up the job. He had some, you know, some tricky stretches where it looked like he was on the verge of losing the job, but he never did. And it all comes down to the control for him. It's very inconsistent, but in the second half, he had a very respectable walk rate, and he also had, if I'm going by memory here, I think a 2.55 ERA after the All-Star break. So it just all depends on which Fernando Rodney shows up at Target Field next year and how long he stays there.
This is how good Al is. He knows Fernando Rodney's second half ERA on top of his head.
And in all honesty, I love the picture on Twitter where he was out in the snow on Target Field with the arrows. But as far as a landing spot, Target Field is where you want. Like, if Yu Darvish doesn't go to the Dodgers or the Angels, the Twins are a team I'd like to see with, you know, with their defense and that ballpark. I think that would be a hell of a spot for him. So for Rodney, look, he's like that third closer if you want to take that third closer.
Yeah.
He's that guy you can. And it's a much better ballpark than where he was playing last
in Arizona. Absolutely. A couple other relievers, or quite a few other relievers signed. Brandon Kinsler, the former Twins reliever, he re-signs in Washington. He'll be third in the pecking order, I believe, to start behind Doolittle and Ryan Matson. You had Brian Shaw and Jake McGee go to Colorado as they try to rebuild their Super Bowl pen. Brandon Morrow heads to the Cubs. Juan Nicasio leaves St. Louis to go to Seattle, while Mike Minor hopes to get a chance to start as he goes to the Texas Rangers. When we come back, we wrap up with one last free agent signing, which I think could have very interesting fantasy implications. Where is it? Who is it? Al and Matt will discuss Tyler Chatwood as we wrap up the show, coming up next.
What's up, fantasy nerds? It's Ashley from Ashley Needs Answers, and I'm here to share some fun facts with you about my friend Jake Seeley, who, by the way, has never met me. Actually, here's one fun fact. They're making me read this great stuff about Jake, and he won't even pick up the phone and say hello to me. I'm just supposed to sit here and make him look great, and he's not even a great human being. Here's one. Jake's a top three fantasy ranker in the last 2 years. Great. But is he a good human? I don't know. I can't vouch for that. I heard he doesn't even like puppies. So decide for yourself. On Target with Jake Seeley, weekdays at 4 p.m. Eastern and 1 p.m. Pacific.
Hello, friends. If you want to win at fantasy sports, wouldn't you listen to people who have already won at fantasy sports? I'm here to tell you about DailyRoto.com. Don't be intimidated by the DraftKings and FanDuel sharks, even the fantasy draft sharks. The guys at DailyRoto.com have not only won $1 million amongst one of the writers, but they've created three others. That's four people who have won millionaire contests from this content alone. Don't be fooled by screenshots talking about $25,000 winners from other places. Go to DailyRoto.com, where they have a proven track record of creating millionaires. DailyRoto.com. Tell them Greg Sussman sent you.
Final few minutes here without Melky or Matt Modica in our fantasy baseball preview edition of the Roto Experts. We appreciate you joining with us and getting up to date on all that you have missed this offseason. And something that you definitely may have missed, as it happened so early and so under the radar, was Tyler Chatwood signing with the Chicago Cubs. He's had a lot of success, Al, in Colorado. Now he doesn't have to deal with being at Coors Field anymore. He does have to deal with being at Wrigley, but it's not Coors, which I think is good. What do you make of Tyler Chatwood signing with the Cubs for our fantasy purposes?
Well, I think it genuinely puts him in the discussion as a late round flyer, whereas just, you know, the Coors half of his splits, I feel like has just canceled that out previously in his career. But I'm going to go with the shameless plug here, Greg, because I actually recently wrote about him on my blog, almelkier.com.
Almelkier.com. Check it out. I'm sure there's a lower there's a lower right under me right now that says go to almelkier.com. So there's the link right there. Go check it out.
So, I recently wrote a piece there. He, among pitchers that threw at least 120 innings in each of the last two seasons, nobody had a higher increase in his average fastball velocity. So, I mean, that's why he's becoming sort of trendy, that and the fact that he's a Statcast hero with high spin rates. But he still struggles with control. So, you know, I think people could go a little overboard with Chatwood, but there's no denying he's been really good the last two seasons away from Coors Field. He just might be one of these pitchers who can succeed despite the high walk rate now that he's throwing harder.
Like Al says, the increased velocity, very intriguing. We love ground ball pitchers. He's going to the Cubs. If the Cubs, look, Javi Baez, I think, is a fantastic defensive player.
Yep.
Can get his, I know last year was a bit of a crazy year for Addison Russell.
Definitely.
I'll leave it at that.
Yep.
But if the BABIP, you know, 2 years ago, what that team did to suppress pitchers' BABIPs was amazing. If it gets anything, you know, better, you have to like him, but I'm like, Al, if it gets too pricey, that's when you got to back away. Right now, nice late round flyer, back of the end rotation guy with upside, but I'm not going to, I think we're going to start seeing him get a little too trendy for me, and that'll inflate his price and maybe put me out on him.
Yeah, so there you go. With Tyler Chatwood, I'm interested. When you play for the Cubs, that kind of organization, as you said, the runs are just suppressed by such a fantastic fielding infield. I owned Tyler Chatwood last year when he's in Colorado, and I started him away. Those home road splits have obviously been talked about quite a bit, and I thought in Chicago it's a good fit. I held on to him last year. To have him in Chicago, I'm even more excited.
Yeah, no, I think you have to be excited. My concern is, look, ground balls are great and stuff like that. I do want to see this outside of Coors. He still walked a lot of guys. That's something that always scares me. Because when you walk a lot of people, the other thing, too, is you have a high whip. And whip matters as well. So, but no, this is a guy, I think Al put it perfect. He's a guy that's trendy, a guy that you want to look for late upside, but you got to watch if it gets too carried, you know, if it starts getting too inflated, then I think you may have to back away.
Yeah, I totally agree. If he's going where Al was talking about, as a late round guy who's inching up, I'm cool with that. I just don't want him as somebody I have to actually pay up for. He's a guy that I fill out my rotation with. It's the same reason why I owned Mike Montgomery in leagues last year. It's the same reason at the end of a draft I took Brett Anderson last year. You want these guys on the Cubs because they're going to win so many games. Guys, it's been really, really fun doing this over the last 2 hours with you. I cannot wait to talk baseball again as we can starting in January to do it all over for the next, 6 months. It's going to be so much fun. For Al Melchior, go to almelchior.com and see all the great stuff he has there. For Wall Street, Matt Modica, who you hear every day on the Roto Experts, my name is Greg Sussman. Thank you so much for watching and so much for listening, and we will see you again next time. Bye-bye, everybody.